Welcome to the Jeff Knows Inc. Entrepreneurial Podcast with your host, Jeff Lopes. Jeff has over two decades experience as a serial entrepreneur, building brands like Kimuraware from his home basement to a multi-million dollar global brand that has sold over a quarter million pairs of boxing gloves. Jeff's here to educate, guide, and drive you on the process of bringing your ideas and dreams to reality with the inspiring stories from some of the top business minds.
Welcome to the Jeff Knows Inc. Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Lopes. Super excited for today. It's our actual anniversary edition, our 100th episode. We got a special guest, Monique Eidlett. Monique is the co-founder of Rain Ventures, star of Undercover Billionaire. What a great conversation. What a great individual. You guys are going to love this episode. Sit back and enjoy. We are live. We are live on the Jeff Knows Inc. Podcast. I'm your host. I got a big smile. Look, she's doing applause. I'm going to do applause. Monique Eidlett on across. I'm so excited. This is going to be our 100th anniversary episode. Our podcast started in April. We already made 100, and I've held this spot for a very special guest. I'm thrilled to have you on. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Happy Thursday. And thank you for this. I mean, my goodness, congratulations, 100 episodes. I mean,
yeah,
more applause.
You say a lot of people don't make it past five. There's so many that are abandoned on iTunes. So when I started this venture, it was more of I wanted just to have a space where people could learn, talk, and just have open conversation, right? And my mindset with the whole podcast is I wanted to have where we're just having an open conversation and people are sitting at the dining room table, kind of like a Clubhouse before Clubhouse started, where people are just listening on and hearing it. So how I usually start our podcast is I allow our audience to know what you're currently doing, but we're going to switch it around because you have such an amazing story and you're such a powerful woman and you're helping a lot of empowerment for women, for just in general, so many people with your company now. Let's start off with Monique as a child. Growing up, where were you? How many siblings? Just let's give me a little rundown. Let's take the story from there.
Oh my goodness. I grew up in Perth Amboy, New Jersey. My mother and father were separated. So my mother raised us. I'm the oldest of three children. I'm a true stubborn tourist, so to speak. but you know, it was amazing growing up on the East Coast because my mother's Greek and Russian. And my father is Black and French and Indian. And I grew up around a lot of diversity and inclusion. Grew up around a lot of the city stuff. So, you know, we were always on the go, on the move. And so I tell everyone, it's no better way to grow up than in a fast pace of getting stuff done.
Yeah.
There was always an urgency of everything, whether it was personal, whatever, like everything was urgent, needed to happen right now. Yeah. So I love that energy that the city life brings.
Yeah.
And when we were in high school, my mother took a federal job in the Midwest, in Ohio, Dayton, Ohio specifically.
Yeah.
That was definitely kind of a culture shock for our family. Growing up where people only saw Black and white versus us growing up around all types of people and culture. And it was embraced and accepted, not just tolerated.
Yeah.
So it definitely was a culture shock to our family. It was the first time I had ever experienced racism and just even understood that that was an option.
What age were you at that time?
I was in high school. I was a junior in high school when I started I graduated from Trotwood High School. So that was a different experience. Went on to Ohio State for undergrad and was really fortunate enough to work for one of the colleges for their placement. They used to place, I was under the director. I worked with the director of career advancement and their job was to place the graduating seniors. So I was able to get a really good look at the top number one companies and who I would want to work for. And I was fortunate enough to get recruited by USA Today.
Yeah.
And it gave me the option to move to four different cities. And I chose Atlanta. And even though I was a national executive, I felt like Atlanta was a great place as a Black woman. Since I didn't go to a HBCU, I actually had a scholarship to one, but was a teen mom. So I stayed in Ohio. I had my son in college. So that was a different experience. But I got my career started at USA Today. It was the most amazing thing, you know, to be so young, to be the youngest executive on the sales and marketing side, to be the first woman of color on that side. I was super young, but I just was so curious and I wanted to learn from the best. And I did.
So there's so many angles I want to go there. So okay, let's just go back to family history. Were you the first, or were there a line of other siblings, or actually you're the oldest. So was anybody else that went to college route? Did your mom ever go, your dad ever go to college route? Or were you the first?
So I was the first to go to traditional 4-year. So I'm a first generation college student, still the only one. I have my master's. So the only one on my immediate family to have a master's. My mother and father are both really hard workers. They were both entrepreneurial spirits. My mother did go on to become one of the top stenographers, I think is what they used to call it, for the federal court system. Yeah. So she went to college by trade, not by 4-year university, but she had an amazing job once we were in high school. So I grew up in low income housing. So that was interesting. It's where my foundation of having empathy for others started. That zip code of ours got us undervalued and overlooked all the time. And I wanted to make sure that when I became successful, that I became a voice for those communities. And it has always been a passion and a purpose for me.
Can I ask you a question? With growing up, you're very close to your mom. What age were you when your dad left? Or your dad's parents separated? It's just when your parents separated.
Yeah, my mom left. Yeah, but I was 2 years old.
Well, so you're a baby still.
Yeah, I was a baby. I was 2. And the great thing is that my mother and father co-parented so well.
Good.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. They were the best of friends. They co-parent very well. We just, you know, my mother raised us, though. But my father and my mother had an amazing friendship. Past, you know, their relationship not working out. So I grew up in a very healthy environment.
Yeah.
We had a healthy relationship with our father and we had an amazing relationship with our mother.
So that is my next question. So growing up, you obviously had a healthy relationship. You had a lot of love in your house. Did you ever feel, obviously you said your area code, but did you ever feel like you were missing anything? And why I'm asking this is I grew up in a blue collar family. My mom, dad, blue collar. My dad was a worker at Ford. And we would get presents twice a year. I mean, it would get one present for Christmas, one present for our birthday. But my parents filled us with so much time, so much energy, so much love that I never felt I needed anything else. So how was your mindset growing up? Did you ever have that thing in your head where I felt like I was missing something, or I wasn't getting enough because other children obviously might have had more than you? Or was it your household was full with so much love that you never really realized that till later on?
So it's a combination of both. Growing up, we never wanted for anything. Yeah. We didn't know that there was classism. I didn't understand classism until we moved to the Midwest, where now it's separated by neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Whereas growing up close to the city, I mean, one block could be millionaires, the next block could not be, but they were you were all connected and interacting on so many levels.
Yeah.
And so moving to the Midwest, where everything is you have to drive to it. And there is no mass transportation like it was in the city. Now you're starting to see whole zip codes where you live on this side of town because you're affluent. You live on this side of town because you're not. Yeah. And that's when my first introduction to kind of classism and racism, where I was old enough to understand it. And, That's how that happened. Growing up, though, to answer your question, we had so much love. Yeah. And just because we lived, you know, income-based housing, we still had all the things that we loved. You know, we still went shopping. We still traveled. You know, my mother prioritized natural and healthy, you know, food in our house. And so we didn't understand it until adults and older children made it an option for us to understand it.
So was there one particular moment or one particular incident that occurred that you were like, okay, like racism is real? When you did move, there was, you want to dive into that?
Yes, it was, I was in class and a young man, I was always kind to everyone, and I always, I never stood for bullying. And there was a young man who called me the N-word, and it was my first time ever hearing that word be used from an aggressive, like, racial perspective. And I remember I busted his nose and I got suspended. And they were looking for my mother. Yeah, I got a mean left hook, Jeff.
I'm gonna send you a pair of boxing gloves.
Yeah, I literally, my response, I told him, don't call me that. And he called it, he said it again to me. And he was the guy, this is a boy.
Yeah.
And my response was, I punched him in his face and I busted his nose. And I got suspended from school. The reasoning was that he just used words. It didn't matter if they were hateful. And I chose to use my fist. And I should have had more control. And, you know, my mother agreed to disagree with that and proudly allowed me to be out of school on suspension.
Good.
But yeah, you know, I go back and I think about these things and these issues, and it's so sad that in 2021, we're still talking about the same things that our, you know, past generations have sacrificed and died for. It's just ridiculous.
And the sad part is as much as we are bringing it to light and bringing it to a lot of awareness, and it's something that reality is, we have to come to understanding that the chances of it ever ending will never end. We just have to bring it as much to the public eye, and we have to change our youth. It has to be from day one, because no one's born racist. No one's born with
fear. It's a learned behavior. It's 100%.
Learned behavior. And it's just, and there's so many things that a lot of the parents are driving. Like, I'm very strict on something, which is turn off topic, is fear. I think fear is something that stops so many people from achieving what they possibly could achieve. And fear is not something you're born with. Fear is something you're taught. I always tell parents this. I try to teach them. It's, think of your mom when you're a little kid. Don't touch a stove. You're going to burn your hand. Don't run down your stairs. You're going to fall. And what I do with our kids, and me and my wife, is once every 8 weeks, we find something our kids have a fear of. And as a family, we do it actually together to break that fear. And then we celebrate when they do break the fear. So I think there's so many things as parents, and I think that's where it has to start. The parents have to start bringing obviously racism, bringing obviously like sexism, bringing obviously fear. So many topics that you got to bring in and have. If you see my post today, I talk about it. For the last 11 and a half years, I've never missed a dinner at home Monday to Friday.
Wow.
And why I do that, and we've done that from day one, I mean, for a while with my wife, is we realized very quickly, once our kids get to high school, it's very hard to build a communicational barrier. So we said, let's start from day one. And we said, we're going to make our mealtime a conversation time. So it's a relaxed environment. I did my post saying, people that know me know this is exactly what I live by, what I preach. And we sit in front of a meal, and every single day, Monday to Friday, we have a meal, and it's our communication. Because I've done that from such a young age, my daughter's now in high school at 14, and she'll sit there and tell us everything. She just, it's a relaxed environment. It's almost like that moment they take their guard down. So I think it's parents' responsibility to teach all these things from a young age, and it just instill. And that's the only way we're going to make a change. Because if you're just telling an adult that's had the mindset from day one, they might in front show this mask. Yeah, I agree. But reality, you're not going to change people. People are who they are, what they were brought up with. So it's going to take a long time, but we have to start as parents with our children. So
I tell people all the time, you know, I move in love. And so when you think about what that actually means, that love is so powerful that the opposite of it, look at the damage that the opposite of love does, the hatred that comes out. And for me, I'd rather focus and teach and talk about moving in love, because it is so powerful when we actually just realize that we have more alike than we do in difference.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're right. It has to start at home, and it has to start with actually having those conversations. And I was really fortunate to grow up in a community that was everything, and from people from all over, from all cultures. Yeah. And it was embraced and it was celebrated.
Yeah.
And my mother purposely took us to, you know, African celebrations, Greek celebrations, you know. And so it's going to be on purpose that families teach their children to love instead of hate.
Yeah. And I think it's also just, it's making sure you surround yourself with as much different cultures and stuff. Like I grew up, same thing. I grew up in Toronto, where my high school, it was just a pool of different races. Like my best man at my wedding, my best friend for years is Jamaican. Like you were brought in this pool where you didn't, it was just, this is my group of friends. This is my, it was not, there was no sections of race. We had Oriental. We had blacks, we had whites, we had like, it was just, and everybody got along. It was just this massive, right, great school. And so I grew up in an environment where I'd never really even paid attention to race. It was just, I like this guy or I don't like this guy. And I think that is what has to be. We have to be brought up in these multicultural hot pots where it's everybody, like you said, it's not even a thought process. You just get along with people that are obviously on the same vibration or the same mindset as you. And I think that's a huge aspect of it. So your first job, let's talk about you, your first experience as an entrepreneur. When was that and how did that all start?
You know, what's so interesting is that we're talking in college, I actually, with my mentor who hired me for my college job, which was at Fifth Third Bank, we were brought out of the bank to create a startup for a Canadian family. They were from Toronto. Don and Trudy McNeil, and they had a capital, and he was a doctor, she's a nurse, and they wanted to start two companies. And so my mentor and I, we left the bank and we actually built up two companies for them. One of them sold and one of them they still own to this day. And that was my first experience working with and for people from Canada. And I'll tell you, it was the most beautiful experience because their mindset was, if you're happy at home, you're more productive with us. And so the biggest office in the office was actually for the kids. I remember that. They were amazing. But so when I was at USA Today, I ended up starting while I was an executive there. I saw this gap that needed to be bridged between my national corporate clients and the fact that I had access to national talent. Celebrities and entertainers and athletes. And I kept seeing that on the entertainment side and the athlete side, they weren't acknowledging themselves as a brand, which meant they were taking checks from corporations when sometimes it wasn't a good fit. And so what I did was I created a brand agency that did market research on the talent to teach them what type of brand that they actually were, who their audience was, and then I would align them with the proper national corporations so that now we would have, you know, to be able to track in a positive way if this partnership really worked. And it was a better alignment from a research perspective. So that's how I started that. And that's how I started getting really involved in the music industry. And that's when I met my ex-husband, when I owned that agency and I was an executive still. We were at an event in Jamaica for music, actually. And then the rest is history.
I'm gonna dive into one little thing from the past and we're gonna go right to the future. You had your first little one in college. How was that experience as a mom and obviously trying to get your education and stuff like that? I think that's an important topic for a lot of moms because obviously you did well, and there's a lot of moms that struggle with it. And you might have struggled with that at the moment. How was that as a mom, a young mom, trying to finish her education, being a mom? Like, who was your mom a big support? Like, how did you get through that moment?
I will tell you, it was a combination of mindset. I had to acknowledge that I was not having a child under normal circumstances and with a normal support, right? Yeah. At a normal time or age. But it was so important to me that I offer him more options than, you know, what a teenage mom could actually do. Yeah. That meant me committing to my educational process and to my work process. I worked 3 full-time jobs when I was in college. Don't even ask me how. And all while still going to school full-time. Yeah.
Crazy, yeah.
I will tell you this. I have the most amazing sister. She's 2 years younger than me. She and her best friend, who is also like a sister to me, they came to Ohio State. They created their college schedule around my schedule. So literally they were literally supporting Demetrius. Sometimes I would have to take him to class with me. Sometimes he'd have to ride to work with me. But for the most part, the two of them and my mother really stepped in to help make sure that I got done and moved on to my next phase of life. So it took a whole village, Jeff. It really, truly did.
His name, Dimitri, is obviously is a Greek, part of your Greek side. Is it named after a family member or just it was just picked that way?
No. So my mother's Greek.
Yeah.
And she's also a pastor. So I was like, oh, first of all, I just love the name Demetrius. Yeah. And then it truly was about how do I honor my mother's Greek culture and how do I give a biblical name at the same time? And Demetrius fit both of those. And I wanted a girl. I wanted a girl so badly that I waited till the very end to actually name him.
That's awesome. It's crazy how you hear stories. Like my son, I gave you a little rundown before we went on live. When he was born, I was put into a room. My wife was 31 weeks pregnant, so it was unexpected. We didn't even have a name yet. And I was put in a room. My wife was knocked out. I was put in a room and they said, your son's probably got about 15 minutes left of life. What do you want to name on his birth certificate? And that was, and the first name, I'm not a very religious person, but I do believe in karma. There's a lot of things I believe in.
Yeah, I'm spiritual.
Yeah, very spiritual. Yeah. So I'm the exact same way. And the first name that came to my head was Tiago. Tiago means God's warrior. And that's what I just wrote down. I wrote that down. And that's how his journey started from there on, right? So it's crazy how certain names come about and stuff.
Oh, my God. How powerful is that?
Yeah, yeah. There's tons of story. If I were to tell you some of these stories, you'd literally be in tears right now. But this is all about you today. So let's fast forward a bit. There's obviously, I'm going to get into Undercover Billionaire, but that's going to be a little part of our topic today. And I know it's still airing, so I'm not sure how much you could talk about it. We're in Canada, so we're literally like 5 episodes behind the US.
Oh,
it started
wow.
like six, okay. 6 weeks before. So I'll tell you roughly where we are on ours. So let's talk about health. Health is obviously a big part of you on that show. When did it become a big part of your life? And you said growing up, your mom gave you a lot of healthy choices. When has that become a huge part of your life and a mission of yours to embed that into different communities? Let's talk about that a bit.
You know, growing up, again, another benefit of living in the city where you can walk everywhere, you know, there were always fresh markets everywhere in Jersey, on every corner.
Yeah.
Both sides of my family, on my father's side and my mother's side, you know, my grandmothers cooked fresh food every single day.
Yeah.
They went to go get their food daily from the meat market, from the farmer's market. So we grew up like that. My mother grew up like that. My father grew up like that. And then my mother, she didn't allow sugar in our house. So everything was like Raisin Bran and oatmeal and, you know, Brussels sprouts, way before Brussels sprouts were, you know,
were cool
now. Right. So everything was about a healthy option and as fresh and close to harvest as possible. So I grew up like that.
Yeah.
You know, as I got older and our lifestyles kick in and you're trapped, you know, I live on a plane and I was waking up every day and I wasn't feeling well. And I kept going to the doctor after doctor after doctor. And they're like, oh, you're fine. Your blood work is normal. And I'm like, you can't, there's no such thing as feeling fine waking up like this. So I started seeing a natural doctor and they did a deep dive on my blood. And they're like, hey, listen, you have deadly inflammation. I didn't even know that was a thing, but it made sense, right? It made total sense, you know, inflamed with mucus and just retaining water and, you know, flying all the time, eating food on the go that wasn't as healthy as an option as possible. So I had to make some real lifestyle changes. I started taking 2 to 3 ginger shots every single day. I started intermittent fasting and wouldn't eat before 11, wouldn't eat after 6. And I started working out, you know, usually 6 to 7 times a week. And so it truly was all of those things combined. But the ginger shots made such a difference. And I think it was like the first 3 months, I lost like 30 pounds of inflammation. Like,
yeah.
And it wasn't anything you could see. I just knew what I felt like.
Yeah.
I was bloated. It was just walking around like a bloated bubble, I guess.
it's
but that's so dangerous, right? It was super dangerous. And one of the things that I think about just growing up and then going and being in college as a single mother. And then at one point I was raising my sisters. My father was remarried and he died when I was 21. And so I thought about the things we had access to. And time again, no matter what city you're in, the incomes are basing whether or not people have access to healthier options.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's ridiculous. It's a human right to have as close to harvest as possible. And this big money business of food sitting on shelves, you know, is getting people sick.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think people realize it. I mean, you go by your everyday life and you just do your normal physical every year and you think you're being fine. But there's a reason why your joints hurts. There's a reason why you're not sleeping while you're waking up 2-3 times throughout the night. There's a reason why you don't feel right. Your body is not at a proper vibration or proper level. It's your inflammation in your body. Inflammation adds to cancer. And that's why the cancer rate is so high. And people don't understand that. Like I've been intermittent fasting for now about 3.5 years. I had my last meal at 8:30. I don't eat nothing till 1:30 the next day. I feel the only thing is I break my intermittent fast on weekends because I love having breakfast with my kids on the weekends. We have a big breakfast. So that's the only time I intermittent fast I break is on Saturdays. And I think it's good because it just changes up your system. So your body doesn't get adapted to it. So, but intermittent fasting, a huge part of it. Our lifestyle as a family is very healthy. We're a very active family. My kids, I'm going to also send you videos of this. My daughter's 14. She's the one that does all the shots. And I sent you that video. My daughter she's literally a health fanatic. Like I'll get home and both my kids are fighting over who's going to be on the treadmill. They literally work out. They're 12 and 14. They work out 5-6 days a week. They eat extremely healthy. We don't have junk food. Like my daughter cringes at anybody even looking at junk food. She's all about health and stuff. And we started this from a very young age. So I think it's very important. And once again, the parents, because the kids are not picking with food they're eating. It's the parents are picking the food for the kids. So I think it's a lifestyle. And once you actually start doing it and understanding it, and that's the biggest issue, it's sometimes more expensive to eat healthy than it is to eat junk food.
Yes.
That is the biggest problem with our communities, right? But how do we change that?
Well, for me, that's what Rooted is all about,
yeah.
Right? And I think it's about changing this exchange of what people think it looks and feels like to eat healthy. If we keep making it about the whole foods, then yes, people are going to feel left out because guess what? There's not a whole foods in lower income community.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to make eating healthy fun. We have to make it about a human right. We have to make it about creating brands that include everyone. We have to make it about accessibility for all, because at the end of the day, as close to harvest tastes so much better than the chemicals that we're eating from these cans. Okay. Like it's a better taste, and we have to retrain people what healthy is and who it's for. It's for everyone. Actually, it's a right. It's a human right. And by the way, it's cheaper in the long run because, you know, everyone's on these pharmaceuticals now because of the food we're eating.
100%. And that's another topic for another day. The pharmaceutical companies.
Big pharma, that's right.
The billion-dollar companies that are just feeding us with junk all day long. I mean, that's another topic for another day. Let's talk about Rain Venture Capital. When did you start that? And that is a huge part of who you are now. So when did that all come about? And I want you to dive into a few stories of people that you have helped change their life and what their reaction, where they are right now. Because I think it's very important for people to hear. So let's start off when the company started, and then let's dive into a couple of the stories of people you've helped.
So Rain Ventures started, it wasn't named until 3 years ago, but we started it 9 years ago when my business partner and I started co-investing together.
Yeah.
I was getting my master's and they brought in an angel fund to teach us about alternative investing.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe that Tim and I were so financially successful and had never heard of angel investing, alternative investing. Yet we had this financial team that brought opportunities all the time, but we weren't being educated on any parts of this process. And as I became the most involved angel investor in that particular group, I started realizing, like, wait a second. No wonder women and people of color are not in the boardrooms. No wonder we're not making C-suite positions. We're not the ones who are investing early. This is these decisions are being made by the people who are betting on the company, and they're being made early. And the direction of the company is made early. And so we made it a point to prove our thesis. So for the last 9 years, we spent my own capital investing in all of these companies with a lens on women and people of color. So we're an inclusive fund. It was really important to us that we represent the world and that we didn't leave any type of founder off of the books. And so we started this thesis, and 3 years ago, we officially named it Rain Ventures, which my daughter's name is Rain. And so it means a lot to me, the meaning of the name and just that it is my daughter. And we're a $50 million fund. My business partner and I, we love what we do. We know that it is the difference. It's not just about deploying capital into the underserved and overlooked founders. It's also about being a support. They need access. They need resources. Yeah. They need a network. They need a trusted, safe space. We consider ourselves very founder-friendly investors. And we want every company that comes into Rain Ventures, we make it that you have to win. We need you to win because we're betting on you. We don't go in with that concept of, oh, bet on a bunch of companies and hopefully one of them will win. Rain Ventures is about all of our companies winning.
Now, I'm sure you get a ton of obviously young entrepreneurs reaching out. You must get, applications all the time. How do you separate the emotional connection to it? Because there's sometimes stories that get to you, but you also are running a business. How do you separate that?
So here's how we always start with every founder is that Rain Ventures is a seed stage investment fund. Mm-hmm. We invest in tech and tech-enabled companies with exceptional founders. However, the process of due diligence does not change. Okay. You have more access now.
Okay.
So our due diligence process is as any other institution or VC funder. We don't let that down just because we have a lens, right? And a support system focused on the underfunded. But what we do is, listen, we want all founders to win. And what we do is when they go through the due diligence, if they're not a fit for our fund, we try to align them with funds that fit their company profile, or we know a thesis of another fund. We have great relationships with early stage, mid stage, and late stage funds. So we always try to at least do some type of connection.
The networking.
Yes. And there have been a lot of companies where they're not right for our thesis, but we still bring them into the offices. We still help them with their pitch deck. We still help them get their company down to the who, what, and why. Yeah. So it's not that, financial capital is just one way to support a company.
Yeah.
There's other ways, and we try to in every way, whether it's advice or the end result of financial capital, support these founders.
Yeah. Is there one or two particular stories of somebody that's just over-delivered from what you expected that you're just like, wow, what a great story or what a great ending or what a great mission they're on that you want to bring up to light today?
Yeah, there's two founders in particular. We love all of our founders, yeah. But there's two companies that I just love so much because it's one co-founder for both companies. He's the same co-founder.
Yeah.
And so Rodney Williams of Listener, and also a solo fund. So Listener's a data over audio company. Think of like the faster, safer version of Bluetooth.
Okay.
And, to see this young Black man who no one was paying attention to and no one could see his big vision for his data over audio, to see that a few months ago they closed their Series C with a really great, strong valuation with Visa taking the lead on it, which also allowed him to start his second company, which is peer-to-peer lending. It is the most genius, genius marketplace. It's a fintech. It's doing so well. It actually just won a lot of awards, and they just closed their Series A. And so it's people like the Rodney Williams, the Travis Holloways, the Morgan DeBons of Blavity Afrotech. They are founders multiple times over. And when we see them winning, and when we see that, because it's been people like myself who are willing to bet on them when no one else was, these are the differences that we have to make in all of these markets. We need diversity, we need inclusion, and we need all types of companies being created. Yeah. So that we can have all business ecosystems doing well. So, but we love all of our founders.
Of course, of course. Your children, you have three children,
yes,
little babies. How old are you, the little babies now?
Well, my oldest is definitely not a baby. None of them are babies.
He's like a younger brother to you.
That's what everyone thinks. They think he's either my boyfriend or my brother. He's 28. Yeah. He lives in LA. And Frankie is our 18-year-old who is a senior in high school. Yeah. And then our youngest is Rain, and she's 13.
Any of them have entrepreneurial juices in them?
All three of them.
I love it.
They're
love
like it. Literally love all three of them have their own businesses. They're all different. You know, our oldest is a producer as well. He's an author, and he works for both of us.
So he's very creative.
Yeah, he's a super creative person. He has a fashion line, a shoe line.
Awesome.
And he still works for the family business on both sides.
Love it.
And then Frankie is an engineer. He wants to be a materials engineer. He also has his own company, but he's also a Division I recruit for basketball. Yeah, he's a true point guard. He's an amazing.
And how old is he?
He's 18. He's a senior this year.
Any hopes for draft?
Yeah. I do know where he's going, so can't say it though because he hasn't announced it yet. But yeah,
good for you. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Does he want eventually try to go pro? Is that a goal?
Yeah. That's his goal. But in the meantime, he'll also be very educated.
Very, 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 very good. And your daughter?
Rain is a true thespian. She is truly the most creative young lady. She's a performer. She can sing. But she's also a little business savvy. So she's like the perfect blend of us.
that's my daughter. She's just turned 14 and she's on the Right Through Toronto. It's a high performance dance team. So she's part of this high performance dance team. So she's super active, but she's just a natural. I look at her and that was me. When I was like 12, I was like hustling sports cars. I was like, I started my first company at 17. Like I've always been an entrepreneur. So I look at her. And she's just always hustling, always trying to find a way to make money. It was a couple of weeks ago on a Saturday. She was in front of the computer. I'm like, what are you doing? Are you doing homework? She goes, no, Dad. She goes, I asked Mom. It's all good. And I go, what are you doing? She goes, I found a website. If I do 40 surveys a day, I make 50 cents a survey. That'll be $20. I'm going to do them on Saturday and Sunday. And she's calculating how much she's going to make them.
She's like calculated it.
Pure hustle, right? So you love that, right? So I appreciate that. And then she's always like, she has her own bank account. She's looking at where she can invest her money and all that stuff. So yeah, I love seeing that. So where did and how did that all come about? I didn't want it to be a big part of what you're talking about because the show was still going on, but Undercover Billionaire, where did that all come about? How did you even get even connected with that?
So I was contacted by the production company and the casting company. And I said to them, like, oh my gosh, where'd you guys, like, I'm not a billionaire. They're like, no, we know, but this is the millionaire version. And, you know, this is a really great show. You know, Discovery really wants to educate people. And, you know, I couldn't find my why at first. And then COVID happened. And the owner of the production company, I saw a way he handled the situation. And I said, wow, that says a lot about him. I would love to be in partnership with him. And my why became about, you know, at a time such as this, when our world was going through something that we had never personally experienced, and so much division and a pandemic at the same time. I mean, so much political division, you know, we're dealing with a pandemic, people are in pain, they're hurting. If I could possibly be an example of hope and inspiration, and more importantly, in a more conscious capital way that I think everyone could use a dose of, then maybe I'll do it. And so I did it. It was the hardest thing I've personally have ever done. I get asked a lot, you know, oh, sure, Monique, isn't this scripted? No. I'm still actually dealing with the trauma of actually going through something like that because it was really traumatic.
How many months were you filming altogether? Like, how many months was it?
3 months.
It was the full 3 months.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes.
So you're away from your family, away from everybody for those 3 months. That's hard.
Well, by the way, Tim and I created a life where our children were always with us.
Yeah.
And so this is the first time that my children have ever been without me and I've ever been without them. So I literally did not know where I was going. I literally did have $100, a used vehicle and a new phone. And I was not allowed to communicate with anyone or have access to my resources or to my network. So that was a real thing.
Yeah.
The day I got to Tacoma is the day that I found out I was going to be in Tacoma. I had never been to Tacoma before, ever, never. And literally had to navigate for 90 days. How do I take $100 as a stranger? I'm lying to people, by the way. That was the most uncomfortable thing, that I'm truly lying to people who are helping me. And how do I get that to a seven figure? But keeping the community in mind first, always. So it was hard.
No, I mean, I'm going to be of all the other, I mean, of the whole entire show, I could honestly tell you from an outsider watching this, you're very genuine, very vulnerable, very genuine, very honest. Just your smile, just the way you interact with people. You seem like this little 16-year-old sweetheart. Like, it's just like, you just want to hug you. You're just this sweet little girl. It's like, it's hard to even imagine you to be this powerhouse executive, because on the show, you're just a sweet, good-hearted person, right? So it's just that mindset where, and just that mindset, like I said, being away from your kids for 3 months, that alone would just devastate most people, right?
Yeah. There were many days where my phone calls to my mother to help me to stay there.
Yeah.
It was so hard. Camera crews following you around everywhere. I don't like to disrespect small business owners. So that was a lot, you know. I didn't want to disrupt a city that was completely shut down from the pandemic. And how to even navigate through that was a lot. And how do I navigate it and let the audience know that we're actually being safe, but at the same time, I cared enough to engage in the community in hopes that we could help with this narrative, you know? So there's all these layers to it. But I made it through the 90 days and I'm excited because I just found out that the show's going back on TV April 20th, back on Discovery, because it's been streaming now. So it's going back April 20th.
It was in the US, it was off Discovery.
Yeah, it was for streaming only. But now, so now it's coming back April 20th.
Well, in Canada, it's on Discovery. But I'll tell you the episode we're on right now, because I'm sure, did you go back and rewatch it all?
I just watched the last two episodes last night. So we're on episode 10.
Okay, I don't know what episode I'm on. I'm on the episode where you just finished a fashion show.
Oh my gosh, Mr. Max. Yes.
What a great story, huh?
Listen, like, when I tell you,
it's community. It's all about community. How amazing is that?
In that place until like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, the night before, trying to like bring alive the details of the current merchandise. And production said to me,
I love your shoe wall.
Right? Everything was so, Mr. Mack was such a staple in Hilltop. And, you know, I do relate to these communities that have small businesses that get impacted negatively through gentrification, you know, all of these things. It's important that we help them stay up to date and kind of grow with their community instead of being forced to shut down. So it was really personal to me.
That is the one thing with 2020 where any small business that wasn't prepared to shift, moderate, or just angle their business in a small direction all started failing. And in Canada alone, 10,000 plus restaurants have all closed their doors. I deal directly with mama papa gyms, which is martial art gyms, small gyms, where it's husband and wife owned. Ontario alone, we've had 48 gyms that are our customers. So it's a ripple effect. Like, we're getting affected, right? We're down. I'm lucky because I've built a lot of streams of income, but my main company that does about 2 million sales a year, we're down 78% in sales because our customer base was closed in 2020, right? So I'm okay with my other stuff, but that 48 of our clients have all locked their doors in the last 11 and a half months. Crazy.
Steph, as you say that, it just really breaks my heart. And that is the why of, I'm the pivot queen. I like to disrupt different markets that need some disruption and some change.
That's me too. I love that.
And that is why I decided to do this show, because I wanted entrepreneurs to know it's okay to pivot. It's okay to take a step back and say, okay, this didn't work, so let's quickly adjust. But I encourage all founders, you have to make sure your companies are tech enabled. Yeah. It doesn't matter what company you have, but you definitely need to make sure that you're tech enabled so that you can be more preventative when things like this happen. And so it did. It forced a lot of businesses down. When I was in Tacoma, even though I'm not from Tacoma, it was breaking my heart to see restaurants shutting, like going out of business, not temporarily shut down,
no,
but going out of business. There's a ripple down effect when businesses close down.
Huge ripple.
Now, right? Like, and that is what my hopes was when I filmed this, is that I would teach a community how to more so rely on each other. That is why it was so important for me to speak to people, show people. It's okay to ask and tell people what you need. You'd be surprised how many people can come together and make change together. And for me, that's what Undercover Billionaire was all about.
Those relationships you built in those 3 months, did you build like lifetime relationships there?
Oh my gosh, yes. I go to Tacoma every month. I just got back to Tacoma.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, because you have to think about it. I created a business model in 90 days, right? That's a pressure cooker. You have to take a step back from it. Now that the cameras are gone and now that everything's died down, you have to actually take a step back and now build it back from the proper perspective.
Yeah.
And so I go every month.
That is
for a
awesome.
Week. I literally just got back. They're my family. Mayor Victoria Woodard's the most amazing leader. Tawana Nobles, by day four, I was living with her. She's now the senator.
Senator. She is. That's awesome.
Yeah. She beat an 8-year income. Yeah, she did. And so this is my family now. This is, you know, we're building
very
rooted
powerful
together.
Individuals, right? I want to say women, just individuals, just powerful, powerful, good-hearted people. And I think the root there was the heart, right? They're just openly loving people that actually do care about helping others. And I think that was everybody you met from the pastor from day one, like everybody you met, you could just sound there. And if from your group to the other two individuals, you could clearly see how the community was different from the other ones. I don't know if you've watched the show with the other ones, but it was a different community altogether. And I can't stress enough the word community, because everybody was there was just like, I'll help you, I'll help you, I'll help you, I'll help you. So you were going to succeed no matter what, because at the end of the day, you had a community behind you, right? Which I think is so important.
I think that, you know, for me, it was, I won't say too much.
No, of course.
But at the end, my proudest moment was my reveal. Not because I had to tell them I had been lying to them. But
wasn't that your scariest moment too?
It was the scariest, most emotional moment. But in the midst of all that emotion, when I looked up and I scanned the room from left to right to see all of the different ages, all of the different races, all of the different backgrounds and just human beings in one room, that we're all brought together. To me, it doesn't get any better than that. That not even on purpose, but when you move in life and love and kindness, you naturally create what the world looks like, inclusive.
Yeah.
And for me, that was the biggest thing.
Yeah.
I didn't have a checklist that said, oh, make sure you talk to a person that looks like this. No. But when you move in kindness and acceptance and just love and you mean well for people, you automatically create an environment around you of like-minded people.
Yeah.
And that will look like a lot of things. And that is what to me was the biggest celebration.
Yeah, I love that. We've been on for about an hour. I don't want to take too much of your time.
Have we? Yeah. What?
Yeah. I can literally talk to you all day. You're my new little bestie here.
We'll have to do this again, man.
I never have scripted questions except one question at the end, which I'm going to ask right now. I'm not taking any more of your time. If something were to happen to you today, in a few words, how would you want to be remembered or described by your loved ones?
I would want to be remembered as empathetic. I would want to be remembered as community driven. I would want to be remembered as an entrepreneur, an activist, an investor, but most importantly, a woman who just really loved the world. Because I really do. I go in with love and I go in seeing the things that make us alike, which is being a human being.
Yeah.
And for me, that's what I want my legacy to be, you know, is kindness, that people need to move with kindness.
Yeah, I love that. No, it's true. It's authentic. You are doing so many good things. And I honestly think this show, as hard as it was for you, is just one more opportunity to put you on a platform that more people are going to see your face and more people are going to be inspired by you. More young women are going to be inspired to follow your lead. So I think sometimes as an entrepreneur, it's hard to understand, but I think it's almost your duty or our duty to be on certain platforms that we could be the inspiration for others. And I think that's one step you've done. And I think this is going to continue for you. And I'm so happy I met you. You're honestly a good person. I can't stress this enough, just a good soul.
Thank you.
And I think you're doing amazing things. And I'm so happy to see your journey going forward.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot, Jeff. And, you know, it's amazing when I get to connect with people like yourself, because to me, that's what this world is all about, is us being more connected than we are disconnected.
Yeah.
And for me, reading the emails and getting the messages that I get from fathers, one in particular, a retired police officer who said that he didn't realize, you know, how he didn't move in kindness and that he was very biased, and that he came on to watch Grant, but ended up really, you know, seeing himself really register the things I was saying, register with him. And then he had his whole family watching as well. So for me, that's the change, right? When you can educate people that just because we look differently, we're not threats because we look differently. It's actually, you get to learn more from people when you're different. You get to teach, you get to learn, we get to be sponges. That's the beautiful thing about humanity. And for this show, I know that that's what Discovery and that's what the production company wanted for this show.
They wanted
for people to understand that we all have the same goals in life. We want to do well in life, but there is a way that we can navigate through this. And that is with kindness.
I love that. And I think that exactly what their accomplishment was originally setting forth was accomplished, because a lot of entrepreneurs in our space, in my space, because I'm very networked in the entrepreneurial world, be honest, watch that show. Exactly what you said. A lot of people, because Grant's very out there. He puts himself as a celebrity out there. So a lot of people wanted to see how he would react. And I think a lot of people quickly gravitated towards you. And it was just a natural gravitation, where I'm the exact same story. My wife, my kids were all watching the show, watching you. We were like you, when you're on, we all had a smile on our face. So I think that came across because you came across as authentic. And I think that is one thing with the way we are nowadays with social media and everything, authenticity is not something we're getting accustomed to. But the problem is, not the problem, which is the benefit is when we do see it, it's actually more clear now.
Right. Oh, that's so good. That's good. You're right.
Because you go to social media and it's everybody posing with their car. If you go to my social media posts, it's me and my kids all day. Like it's, I try to be as authentic, and this is my life. You see a lot of people is about who's got a car or who am I going to rent a jet so I could take with a photographer to take 30 photos. And I could put posts that I own a jet. It's all part of my language bullshit.
No, it is.
You do find somebody's authentic and vulnerable. It comes across because you could pick it out from a crowd in a second, and it means so much more. So I think that is a huge aspect of why you were going to be able to change a lot of lives, and you'll be able to create a bigger following to your message because you are authentic. So I'm so happy you came on. Like, I'm honestly so happy you came on.
Thank you.
This is going to get a great audience. They're going to really appreciate this.
And please tell your wife and your children, thank you for supporting and watching. This is all about changing our narratives, you know, and making sure that we have more positive examples of different learned, you know, experiences. It's like a full on masterclass on just navigating through difficulties, right? It doesn't mean you have to do things. We don't all do things the same way, but what we should be doing is respecting each other, respecting the communities that we're trying to build in. And most importantly, just being conscious about how we behave, man. Like, I'm just like, this is getting out of control. Yeah. We have to be a lot more conscious on the things that we do and the decisions we make in life.
Yeah, I love it.
So thank you for supporting. And we'll have to circle back on this one, on another subject one day, because you and
I can literally talk to you for hours. I literally have in my head about
10 or 50, hours.
I have about 10 or 15 things I still wanted to talk to, but we'll leave it for another day. Thank you so much. You are awesome and appreciate it.
Thank you for what you do.
Thank you. That's a wrap for today. I want to thank our guest, Monique, for taking time for her busy schedule to be a guest on the Jeff Knows Inc. podcast. What a great way to cap off our 100th episode. What a fun venture it's been on so far. I can't wait for the next 100. If you guys enjoy this podcast as much as I did, please help spread the word. Tell your friends, tell your family, leave a review. We love spending time reading the review. 5 stars would be absolutely amazing. Until next time, guys. Keep moving forward.